from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Guest host today again is Mr. Jeff Jones.
Hey everyone, I have not eliminated Ryan.
Not at all. Ryan is not dead in a ditch somewhere. He's actually...
There's enough air in the trunk of that car.
For another 30 minutes. Right?
Yes.
At least.
Assuming there's a human body in there, which there's not. That's crazy talk.
That's crazy talk. Yeah. Speaking of crazy talk, it's time for a segue.
There's a good segue.
Segue. All right. Today's segue, we're actually going to be talking about... Are You Rapture Ready? Which is a bit about the title song was a little bit about that, kind of like a poor man's
Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash singing about the end of days. And we're also going to be talking about something that's been a recurring theme on the site. A lot of people have been talking about this, whether or not religion makes you more violent or less violent, or if it doesn't make a difference. So we're going to be having a little discussion on that. But first up, let's talk about being rapture ready. Now, me and Jeff, we downloaded and watched the 2 of 3 parts of Left Behind series.
Yeah, that's the longest 4 hours of my life.
That was a long 4 hours. Now, if you're not familiar with the Left Behind series, basically there were a series of books all about the rapture. And the main character, you know, obviously he's a filthy heathen like us. He experiences... pretty much the end days, you know, with everybody going up to heaven. That's the rapture thing that all those who really were, you know, fervent believers.
Rapture.
They were rapture. And, it's pretty much talking about the end times and trying to convert people, I guess, and dealing with the Antichrist.
Yes, the Arian Antichrist.
Now, I'm curious. I want you to tell me, first of all, what were your expectations coming in? Into the movie, and what did you leave out once you watched it?
Well, the first thing that I thought when I started watching, and I should mention that I read some reviews. Apparently, the movies and the books. Of course, there's always the movies left out a lot in the book because the movie was really, it was garbage.
Ouch.
I'm sorry. Do I have to pet Kirk Cameron's ego? He's
no.
Got an imaginary friend for that.
Oh.
Ouch.
Ouch.
Okay. Anyways, so yeah. I went into it thinking that it wasn't going to be as obvious a religious movie. I thought, you know, it was going to have that subtext throughout, but I didn't actually expect to hear Jesus be mentioned, like, you know, every...
13 seconds kind of a thing?
Exactly. Yeah.
So you're saying is you weren't expecting it to be as preachy as it was?
At least as blatantly preachy. I expected there to be, you know, they would refer to it as the holy higher power or something, you know, something along those lines. But to actually just outright go like, it's Jesus. I think it's Jesus. It's Jesus. 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 You know.
You know what I thought was hilarious was the fact that there's, in the second movie, there's a scene where they're talking to this Jewish rabbi guy who's supposed to be the preeminent scholar,
mm-hmm.
and he goes to meet 2 witnesses, because in the Bible apparently there are witnesses.
The fire-breathing guys?
Yeah, the guys that breathe fire out of their mouths.
Phenomenal stuff.
It was, that was something special. But anyways, he goes over there to talk to them, and they pretty much, you know, say the same kind of rhetoric that you've heard, like, you know, God loved us so much, he sent his only begotten son down to die for our sins. And after that speech, and after, I guess, seeing the flame coming out of their mouths, this Jewish scholar suddenly convinced of the divinity of Jesus, I guess converting. Now, it made me a little uncomfortable at that particular stage, because it's one of those things under the radar. It's like the admonition from them saying, like, well, the Jews are wrong. They need to accept Jesus. And at least they didn't get into the whole thing where he's like, I'm sorry for what my people did to you, Jesus. At least that didn't happen. But I was uncomfortable throughout the entire thing. I didn't actually think they were going to bring, like, let's convert the Jews into the whole movie scape thing.
I thought that was Coulter's territory.
Ann Coulter? Well, they need to improve, apparently. That's her whole shtick. And apparently there's nothing so perfect as being a Christian.
Mm.
The other thing that was really kind of curious or kind of weird about the whole thing was that they really tried to have this whole 24 kind of like dynamic
of
trying to unsolve this mystery.
Yeah.
You remember at the beginning there's a guy who has apparently this disc, this
Oh, yeah, the watch disc.
Yeah, it's in his watch.
That they have a reader for on their computer.
I don't know. I mean, you don't have a watch disc reader? I mean, you're dumb. You need
seriously, I need to go to the Best Buy.
Get with the freaking program,
get
dude.
A watch reader.
Screw MP3s. It's all about
watch discs.
So anyways, he's like, oh, I've uncovered all this stuff. And the intrigue, you know, you're almost, you're kind of sticking with it because you're curious where they're going to go with the intrigue. Like, even if you're not buying the whole, you know, everybody that believes in Jesus was suddenly brought up to heaven, ignoring that for just a second, there's some political stuff going on. And, you know, I'm like one of those guys who watches, you know, A Few Good Men and
really
likes it. You know, one of those political hounds or kind
of
thing.
Yeah, yeah, you've got like a miniature Tom Clancy collection.
No, Tom Clancy's is... You're thinking John Grisham. Right?
Oh, am I?
Yeah, Tom Clancy's more like... That's, you know, war things going on.
Oh, there's no conspiracies in those? I don't know. I guess I know you shoot a lot of people.
I guess they both shoot a lot. Maybe some Michael Crichton conspiracies.
Sure. Why not? Let's just throw out the authors.
I'm throwing out the three authors I know.
Yeah, like, didn't Stephen King write about this, too?
You know, he could have.
He may have.
Yeah, The Stand. That's what it was called. Anyways... So, there's this mild political intrigue, and you're thinking this is going to be really interesting, but what it ends up being is that they make the UN look like pretty much the most evil organization ever. Like, the big brotherism is going to come from the UN, and you're watching the whole thing, and you're just like, why are all these countries just, you know, so giving power to the UN? I'm sure countries like China, countries like... you know, well, most Asian countries, they probably didn't lose any of their people. They're not unstable. They're just like going like, what's going on in the West here?
What the heck, man?
Kind of craziness going on there. But they suddenly brought in this guy called Nikolai Carpathia.
Yes, it was Carpathia. Yes. I kept thinking he was Dracula for a while.
Who is like possibly the worst Russian accent. Now I do a really crappy Russian accent. And I'm going to try to imitate him. So there's like one of those scenes where it's like, we should... Buck, which is the main character's name, of course.
Oh, right.
Buck... What was
Williams,
it?
I think?
I don't remember.
He was like, Kurt Cameron to me.
You must help us to bring peace to the world. We will have peace for 7 years. And,
what comes after that?
It was really funny because the whole thing is he kept mentioning that, so everyone would know that it fulfilled the Bible prophecy of there being 7 years of peace before...
Something.
You know, something, some
the
crazy...
Tribulation.
The tribulation, right, guess, before that happens. But I'm like, who makes a peace treaty being like, well, there'll only be peace for 7 years.
7 years. We're going to try this peace thing for 7 years, and then we're going to go back to the old ways.
And plus, it always brings me back to that question of saying that, you know, because he ends up being, like, the bad guy. Ooh, did you think I spoil it? Uh-oh. Yeah. Anyways.
That movie was pretty much spoiled from the get-go.
So he ends up being the, you know, Antichrist. Mm-hmm. And what's really hilarious, though, is like you have to wonder, my advice to the Antichrist, if he does come, like, just read the Bible and just do everything.
Do a 180.
Do a 180. Know? Pull a 180.
7 years of war.
Or come on, you got some powers. Make yourself look...
shoot fireballs.
There you go. Shoot
walk
fireballs.
On water.
Walk on water.
Trick people.
These are some pretty good things to try out.
Yeah.
So my piece of advice to you, Antichrist, if you're out there. You know,
if you're out there listening.
If you're out there listening.
This is close as you're going to get to us praying.
We pray to the Antichrist.
Uh-oh.
That's fun.
There's hate mail.
Now, speaking about Rapture, just to move just beyond those guys and onto some other hilarious videos, there's a video that I put on the website that Jeff showed me. Credit where credit is due, Jeff.
There you go.
The video is essentially this very, very strange... at first, like, you watch it, it just looks like it's going to be basically your standard story of an atheist guy being
an
told...
An arrogant atheist guy
being told that about Jesus, and all of a sudden, you know, probably coming to that, oh, well, that makes sense. No, instead what they decide to do is they decide to pull this kind of weird...
Con.
con on him. Basically what happens is a guy goes to go bring some drinks... get some drinks for his friends. When he comes back, everyone's in a panic. There's phones ringing everywhere. People are like, what do you mean he just disappeared? And then they go on. And one friend's like, it was all on the radio. They're saying it's probably this Christian rapture thing. And then everyone's like, what do you mean your baby just disappeared? And it looks like pretty hectic, like a crazy
scene.
Yeah,
it helps with the music. It's like we ripped it out of a Bruckheimer film or something.
Anyways, at one point, the guy's like, I need to call some churches, find out if there's anyone there. And And then finally at the climax, one of the characters is like, "Where are my drinks?" And he's like, "What are you talking about? This is serious.
This is the rapture.
This is serious. This is the rapture." And it's like, "Where's my drink?" And then all of a sudden,
the two Christian guys
that had, you know, supposedly disappeared, come back, and they're like, "Yeah, why didn't you get me a drink? Haha, I like fruit punch." And then there's like a fruit punch discussion for a good 30
seconds.
Yeah,
what's up with that?
I don't even know. And at the end, they're like, "So." I guess a guy like, you know, like everyone's laughing. Everyone in the office was in this. There must be a good 50 people in
with
the office.
With nothing else to do at this.
Running around, pretending to be phone calls, looking all panicky, and apparently winning Oscars for their amateur performances. And then after that, everyone starts laughing, and they laugh. And they're like, "Ha, ha, ha, wow, we were in on this joke." Telling me that they must have been planning this for a good solid a year.
You have to wonder, eh? Like, how long? Like, that takes a while to orchestrate. I can't even get I can't even get our office to send us post-its without like 7 layers of bureaucracy.
And I'm like, did the main guys go over to the boss and say, "Listen, I got this great thing we can do to really mess around with this atheist
this
at work." Anyway, so at the end, smugly, the guy declares, "Well, you know, you don't need to worry about that because it doesn't exist. It's not real, is it? Or is it?"
leaving the atheist.
And then he smugly walks away with a nice little shuffle.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, wow, I would sue the crap out of this office. I'm like, thanks a lot for...
the early retirement.
The early retirement. I'm going to sue you for millions of dollars. You bastards.
You bastards.
It's something special.
Yeah.
What were some of the other videos that we were watching? There was a couple other Rapture videos. There was your classic alarmist thing where they try to make it look like a documentary, saying like, "Well, did you know that there are modern tribulations? The number of earthquakes have increased."
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Can you back these stats up? Well, my cousin lives in San Francisco,
and he keeps saying there are tribulations.
Tribulations.
And then there was like, "The mark of the beast will come out." I remember like this one guy said, "Everybody's wearing tattoos."
Oh, yeah.
And
it
was like, "That's everyone
that's
will have a mark."
Yeah. I would have assumed that it would be like, not, you know, a self-imposed mark. You know, like all of a sudden you'd wake up and you'd have like something. Not, you know, "They'll voluntarily pay big wads of cash to get a really cool yet evil mark."
I always found it strange, though. And that the Bible really talks about sort of like the big brotherism, one world government kind of thing. And you have to wonder, well, I'm just curious, like, why at the time do you think they were so afraid of like a unified government?
At the time the Bible was written?
Yeah.
I am really bad with history, so I'm not going to answer that for fear of looking ridiculous.
Well, my whole curiosity with it is that basically the Bible as it stands now is a political document. It was a political document essentially woven together by the Council of Nicaea. And this council was ordained by Constantinople, who wanted to unify Rome, was severely weakened, with a new religion. Okay, so you are Rome, you're a Roman emperor. Okay, and you are overseeing this. Are you going to accept this tome, which basically says that a one-world government spells the end times when you are the Roman Empire? It just seems kind of dumb to include that in this political document. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You have nothing to say about that?
Yes.
All right, we'll take that.
You'll have to. I'm trying to fill my shoes as the dumb co-host.
Well, you
filled it
at that point.
I'm doing it phenomenally right here.
Nice, very nice. all right, let's move on. We'll move on to the second subject that I wanted to talk about. And basically that is, there were a couple comments on my site regarding, there's an about me kind of thing. And on it, I wrote a little dialogue, and there's a controversial part of it. The controversial part is this. I say at the beginning that sectarian violence and fundamentalism are a natural phenomenon of religion. Now, I had a few people comment on that saying, "Well, do you think that's a bit of a broad stroke?"
Right.
To which I had a discussion with a fan who's a Christian. His name is Ben. And in it, we sort of like had a dialogue basically saying, my argument was essentially saying, well, you know, it may sound circular, but, you know, you can't have sectarian violence without sectarianism, which is the definition of religion. Now, I don't want it to, you know, obviously maybe I'll revise that statement because it does sound a little redundant, but nevertheless, kind of hard to have religious violence without some form of religion, per se.
Right.
My other point that I was trying to make, and this is the point that we're going to be discussing, is the idea that I was, you know, the implication is that violence is, you're more likely to be violent if you are religious than if you are not. So, this is our discussion point. So, first of all, I want to hear your thoughts on that particular issue.
All right, well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that all religious people are inherently more violent than non-religious people. I know a lot of religious people, a lot of my religious friends are very, you know, they're very friendly people, and they don't fly off the deep end, but there is a certain amount of, I guess, fundamentalism, or fundamentalists that do fly off the deep end, and it's a lot easier to justify your actions and your motivations and to rationalize your behavior as moral for the greater, you know, for the greater good. If you have that, you know, if you raise the stakes that high for your actions, then yeah, the ends justify the means.
Well, one of the things that I was reading is there was this particular book. I'm trying to remember what it was, what it's called. But in the book itself, it mentioned that fundamentalism is a fairly recent phenomenon in religion. It is kind of a reaction to the modernization of our society.
Right.
And as we become more modern and religion itself becomes more marginalized in our activities, mm-hmm. There's this, you know, movement to that pushes back, and fundamentalism really is at least according to this woman,
right,
a new phenomenon. My argument regarding that is that perhaps our interpretation of fundamentalism, or how we describe them, is fairly new. But the phenomenon of having fanatics, of individuals that are like completely and utterly devoted, is not new. And I know that the old argument is that if you look at religious wars, if you look at all nine crusades, if you look at the Inquisition, all of these were politically motivated. And that's not wrong. But you have to consider under which... you have to look at religion, instead of being responsible for it, you have to look at it more like a tool. Religion becomes like the very hammer to drive down the nail of violence. Basically, if you have any political problems, it's difficult to convince someone to go to war and murder your enemies unless you have a couple of, say, aces up your sleeve.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, religion has been that ace up everyone's sleeve, because you can consider it like this. Essentially, there are a few options you have to dehumanize your opponents.
Right.
One of them is to say, like, you know, the kind of a World War II thing of saying they're genetically inferior.
Right.
There's also sort of saying they're not human, they're less than human.
Right.
Kind of like that, the idea of how you justify slavery by calling saying a black person,
right,
is only worth a particular percentage,
right,
of a white person. So these are ways to dehumanize, but there's also this out-group dynamic that happens from individuals having different religious beliefs of saying, well, their religious beliefs are wrong, they are leading other people astray, we need to put a stop to this, we need to put a stop to them. For the greater good. And compare that with everyone else, like the, you know, genetically inferior, or even a person is only worth a certain percentage. That's a difficult sell. But the cell is saying that they are preaching heathenistic beliefs,
right,
that they are just, you know, doing everyone else wrong, that they are trying to convert and mess with
people. They
want
to bring us all down to the subhuman like they are.
Exactly.
Kind of
like
thing.
The danger of that is because rather than just being something that's inherently physical, it's something intangible. It's an idea.
Right.
And that idea that they say, like, well, their religion can be spread to to other people is not something you can defend against like you could, you know, through segregation. You can't just segregate them. For a lot of these guys, you're like, we need to eliminate them because their ideas,
right,
are contagious.
Yeah.
And we must eradicate those ideas.
Yeah.
So when I say that, for instance, religious violence is, you know, kind of like a natural phenomenon, what I mean by that is not to say that the individuals within that organization are going to be more violent than anyone else. What I'm trying to say is that they are part of a mechanism that is a tool of probably politicos who want to use any system available to them to convert and control people to their beliefs, and often those beliefs are going to lead you to violence. Mm-hmm. And throughout much of history, that's been the case.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is, there's always been this idea. Well, you know, there are plenty of good Christians, and being a Christian, for example, or being a good Muslim, you're gonna do the right thing. You're gonna act the moral way. Well, if you look at the actions of Christians who consider themselves good Christian at the time, and pick whatever time, I don't think you're going to find that their values, if you were to scrutinize them with today, would be at all aligned with what you believe, even if you yourself are a Christian or a modern-day Muslim. The reason being that your beliefs, be they now or be they 200 or 300 years ago, there really is no general consistency of morality.
Well, it's adaptive.
Adaptive, exactly. So, really, a good Christian today and a good Christian 300 years ago are different people. They may share a lot of the same common values, but they're not going to share all of them.
No, and I don't think it's possible. Just given the way society has moved on and to use a bad word, evolved.
Yeah. Well, we can say progress. All those individuals.
Okay. The way society progresses. I mean, there are only so many archaic beliefs you can hold on to that can withstand just, you know, the
test of time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it will eventually erode, whether you like it or not. There are some virtues that can still apply. Obviously, you've got don't kill someone, but these aren't the kind of things you necessarily need religion to tell you not to do. It's more the finer details of any individual religion. You know, the basically the separator between the moderate and the fundamental.
Well, it'll be there's always a certain amount of lawmaking that a religion tries. I find that any religion that's able to kind of like survive is the one that has as broad a set of laws as possible and not really narrow. I mean, you look at the idea that the Muslim world is having a big problem modernizing itself has a lot to do with Quranic law, which is not compatible with the way that we view morality nowadays. It just does not hold up. The idea, like, for instance, of that woman who received 200 lashes in Saudi Arabia for being raped.
Because she wasn't escorted by a man in the car,
She wasn't escorted by a man that was a relative in the car. She received 200 lashes. Here's the crazy thing. Normally, it's 100 lashes for being raped, but they wanted to set an example of why you shouldn't drive in a car with a man that is not related to you. Now, just that, if you hear that.
They whipped her more?
Yes, they whipped her more.
That is so nice of them. That
isn't it, though?
That is so generous. I am going to go there for
Please,
my vacation.
Please, sir, can I have some more? Here in the West, we're uncomfortable with that. We can easily say, well, this is just absolutely wrong and brutal. You know, she was raped, she's the victim, why lash her? Well, the reason is because this Quranic law is very specific. It says that, well, she's dishonored her family, she needs to be punished. She didn't follow the rules of being with, a man that is her relative at all times. And sure, you can establish a rule and say, well, you broke the rule, you should be punished. But at the end of the day, at least here in the West, we measure rules not just in terms of, how we abide by them, but whether or not these rules are moral. And we have that imperative now because we don't use a religious system in order for us to... That deals with absolute. We don't use a religious system to compare those and analyze those laws. We actually use modern-day ethics, and those ethics aren't actually a product of religion. And in fact, most of this modern ethic has existed in spite of a lot of what religion teaches us.
Now,
which is not to say that it's, again, I don't want to make a blanket statement by saying that all things of religion are bad, and there will definitely always be elements that you can say, wow, that still applies for today. Well, that's true.
Before religion.
Before religion. There was certain things that we just did that we continue to do, even without someone writing in a book that says that it's completely and utterly holy.
Right.
We don't need that.
There's actually, I don't know if I can find the link for it, but there's a pretty good, it's rather old, there's a pretty good documentary called Nice Guys Finish First. It's a Richard Dawkins thing, and he was talking about society and how religion, basically not, you don't need the set rules, because for survival of the of a species, they will work together, even if they, you know, disagree. It's pretty interesting. I'll try to find the link, and I'll try to post it for you guys. It's actually really interesting, and it covers a lot about how morality can exist without religion.
Well, the point that I'm trying to make, and I guess we'll wrap this up fairly quickly, is basically in the question of whether or not religion makes you more violent, makes you less violent, or if it makes no difference, the answer is not one of those things where it's going to affect you on a daily basis. On a daily basis, it's not going to make you more or less violent. It's going to be completely and utterly the same as someone who's non-religious. And the reason for that is because our morality doesn't actually come from religion. We like to think that it does. We like to credit it. But again, like I said, I mean, if you look back at someone who believed in the same book and they're 300 or 400 years back, you wouldn't really be able to recognize their moral attitudes. In fact, you'd probably be appalled at some of their particular attitudes, especially regarding slavery or human rights in general.
I mean, just anything out of that Old Testament.
Anything out of that Old Testament. And what is the difference between them and us? Well, it's not. You can't just suddenly say, well, we have a better interpretation of the Bible now, because interpretations run throughout the entire gamut. The selective interpretation has changed because of the environment. The environment hasn't been affected by that selective interpretation. It's the other way around. So the one time where religion can make you more violent, and this is my point, is the fact that what we were saying before, where it becomes a tool for, you know, not only irrational hatred, but, you know, it can be a tool for genocide. And we still see, you know, on this planet, there are still these same conflicts that are happening. Does anyone wonder what is exactly happening in Iraq? Why that's happening? I mean, there is a reformation that is occurring within the Muslim religion. The Sunni and the Shiites do not agree on, you know, for instance, the lineage of prophets, and they, you know, well, I guess there's a lot more to it, and I don't want to go into detail about this just this episode. But the point is that these individuals, when left to their own merit, would probably be just as, you know, violent or not as violent as me or anyone else. But it is...
No, provided their society had been allowed to grow a little bit.
Exactly. Provided right. That their system of morality is based on, you know, progressive ethics rather than what I consider to be, at least, regressive ethics.
Where the rules are carved in stone.
Where the rules are carved in stone. And a lot of times, you know, it's funny because as human beings, we live always in the gray zone. I mean, you can put a slab of stone that says, thou shalt not kill, but you're always going to find someone who says, well, is there an instance where that might be okay? What if I'm defending my family?
Yeah.
What if I'm in mortal danger? What if my country's being invaded? What happens when, you know, there are circumstances that force me to kill? Do I suddenly go to hell? Now, a Christian's going to tell you, well, repent, and Jesus will forgive you. Well, just ignoring this forgiving thing, just talking about morality, because asking for forgiveness didn't make your actions moral.
No. it basically, you're asking for permission after the fact.
Right. It you may feel less...
you may feel, you know, relieved.
Guilty. Yeah, you may feel relieved, but it doesn't change your actions. So just dealing with the actions themselves, what do you do with those gray zones? And how can religion really deal with those? And the answer is it just can't. It cannot. And luckily, it does not. Fundamentalism is an example where it does. These are individuals that live in absolutes, and we look at them and we're like, what the hell is wrong with you?
These crazy people protesting this funeral. What's up with that?
Yeah, you're crazy. Or, you know, like, why is it that you think that by killing this person you're going to be rewarded? And that is because they take a very literal and very special interpretation of their holy text. Of course, those interpretations can be made differently. You know, jihad can be viewed as sort of an internal struggle. But it doesn't only have to be viewed that way. There are many interpretations, and that, again, leads to the possibility of acting violently. So I think that pretty much covers my particular thoughts. Do you have any closing thoughts on that particular argument?
On that topic? Well, I'm pretty much on the same page with you. I find that on a whole, people who have a religious doctrine are and follow it fairly regimented are able to rationalize their actions, even if they're immoral. They're able to rationalize it in such a way that it's not as you know, they don't necessarily view it as immoral because it serves a greater good that
I save these souls.
Exactly. So it's okay to, like, for instance the rapture video to talk about that. I'm sure the people who produced that were thinking, well, it's okay to deceive this guy because it's brought him closer to what we think, like to Jesus, and that's what he wants. So I'm sure in this instance it's okay. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Even
though
they were, providing false testimony, bearing false witness.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. I'm sure they knew they were doing it, but in this instance, it's okay.
That's a definite gray zone. I mean, perhaps it is okay. But like I said, seeing as how the argument or the rule is written in stone. We're left with the burden of having to try to make those decisions. And because it's never going to be, you're never going to have a tome, a religious tome that's going to deal with every single particular situation, where do you find the particular morality that guides you even past those strict rules? Well, you find it in, the ethics of your present-day society. And hopefully the present-day society that you live in is progressive rather than regressive. But again, that's a discussion for another podcast. So we're running up at 30 minutes. It's a little bit longer than last
minutes?
Time. I hope everyone's satisfied with the length.
With the length?
I know that everybody wants it longer, but, I also have a life.
You also have a life.
I have a life. And it is a Friday when I'm recording this. Hopefully I'll put it Saturday, but it is a Friday, so I'd like to go out and have myself a good time. And I'm sure that you want to go home and
like
do something very similar.
Yes, exactly. Although I think I should maybe crack open some history textbooks. Maybe. give myself a bit of homework for next time.
A little bit of homework for the next show. All right, well, I am your host, Jacob Forte.
And I am your co-host, Jeffrey Jones.
Jeffrey Jones. Do you not know your own name? You want to take two?
Can I take two?
You can take two.
All right.
I'm not going to edit this, though. You can take
two.
You're
not editing this.
No, okay.
Okay, so we're just buffering this.
Yeah, we're buffering.
All right, awesome. So anyways, let me tell you a story. This is, I'm the co-host, Jeffrey Jones.
That was the longest outro ever.